Hi, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Great. Nicola, I don't see I don't see a link to any presentation for run summary in the.
Yes. David was supposed to make that the DCC entry public like now.
Okay.
So maybe I can, let me send it to you.
Yeah, I can just add the link if that's the case. Actually, good. I think the link is now in the agenda. Someone could check. Super. Sorry about the confusion on the time side of things. Hopefully it doesn't cause too many problems. Anyway, we'll wait 2 more minutes. Just give people a chance to join and check who else is on from the LSC, from the Liga Virgo side. Okay, let's get started. And welcome everybody to the call this morning. This is another in our standard sequence of open LVM calls. Apologies if there was confusion about the time. I think it's right in the document, if I in the agenda. Let me just again go with announcements. First item is, again, if you have something that you'd like to share briefly with this group in one of our calls, please contact us. David Shoemaker has been acting as the person that will get things into the agenda and get the agenda pulled together. We're sort of looking for things that would be 10 minutes, but not more. We don't want to have long, long presentations that go on. So that's the first item. The second item, it's a little later in the agenda, but I'd like to do it early and then I'll do it at closeout again, just so that nobody misses it. We're currently working on a set of papers that are anticipated to be coming out soon, soon being on a timescale that our collaboration is able to do things. For 1904-12M, 1905-21G, and 1908-14BV, there are papers that are beginning to be circulated inside of the collaboration. The fastest time to release would be of order 5 weeks from now. It could be a little bit later than that, depending on how things go. And we don't yet have a sequencing for how we're going to release those three papers. The other paper that is still in target for late April is the gravitational wave transient catalog update for O3A. That has not begun a mature circulation in the collaboration yet, and so it is greater than 6 weeks from release, which is, of course, means it's still well on track. But just a heads up, there will be other associated papers that come out with that describe aspects of the other candidates and other gravitational wave signals that we identify and publish in the catalog. There will be astrophysical interpretation of rates. There will be some testing, general relativity, and a number of other things. So there are the updates on publications. I also had one request that I just want to, unfortunately, I don't have a detailed update, but I just, somebody, Dave Sands emailed me to ask about the candidate S200114F. That is the, is the burst candidate that we put out on the 14th of January. There is no update on that at the present time that we have. It's being studied in great detail by the collaboration in the context of our unmodeled burst searches to understand if it remains viable. But it's right now it still sits there as a candidate with no other update on. I guess the one last announcement that is more a sort of just an alert, if this turns into something more concrete in the coming weeks, we'll get a more detailed note out about it. We're working towards the possibility to do what we call early warning alerts for compact binary signals. In the dream world, a very loud signal, when the detectors reach their ultimate design sensitivity, could in principle be detected, of order a minute, maybe a little bit more, before the merger. We're taking a look at our infrastructure to see if it's possible to do a few tweaks of it for April timeframe. That would in principle allow early warnings to be passed through. Right now, there's a few things that would stop that from happening. At some point in the coming weeks, we'll make a decision if we're going to do those changes. And then the thing that everyone will have to be aware of is that if everything went really, really smoothly, you could actually get an alert that actually has the time of merger in the future by a few seconds. So if you have infrastructure that relies on that time being in the past, you might want to think about it. Now, it's only a few, our best there would be a few seconds. It's not going to be some hours before the merger. So that's just a little heads up. We'll give more details when we actually have them. We don't have much right now. Okay. So with that, if there are no questions about those things, we'll move on to the run summary and plans. Okay, Nicola, I think you're going to take this away this morning.
Yes, do you want me to share my screen?
If you can, I think that would be good. Let's try it and see how it works.
Yes. Do you see it?
Yes, we do.
Okay. This is the LIGO-Virgo-Kaggle update for this month. So moving on to slide 2, this is just a summary of the O3D. We are now at the 16th week, and basically, in spite of the bad weather during winter time, I think we have still a good performance overall. So we have a 3-detector network with a duty cycle of almost 50%, at least 2 detectors more than 84% of the time, and no detector for only less than 4% of the time. The two pie charts, the two main pie charts that you see compare O3A and O3B, and you can see that the numbers are very similar. And at the bottom, you can see the individual detector performance, with basically individual duty cycle greater than 75% in all cases. Moving right through, this is the binary neutron star ranges as a function of time. And with the colors, you see the new points with respect to the last LVM meeting. And you can see that the ranges are steady. And I would like to point out that there is a slight but real increase of the Virgo BNS range due to various improvements that we have been able to perform over the past few weeks. In the short commissioning time that we have in when we are not taking data. So we are now very close to 60 megaparsec, and the hope is to go at that level and to stay there for the remainder of O3D. Moving on to slide 4, the public alerts. So since the last teleconference, there were 5 alerts and no retraction. 4 of them are likely VDH candidates. One is a possible BNS candidate, but there is a significant probability of it being of terrestrial origin. Slide 5, as you probably know, for the candidate 20.0213T, we sent an updated circular mentioning parameter estimation by the BitB software, which is probably something new for you observers. So BitB is a new tool that will ultimately replace the tool that we are using for parameter estimation, that is LAL inference. And in the particular case of that candidate, it was a potentially EMBrite source. And BitB was converging, let's say, faster than LAL inference. And the offline code that is doing the parameter estimation has been reviewed internally in the LVC. So the decision was to send out the sky map. But the issue there was that the online code, so which is doing what is needed to be able to send a circular, had not been reviewed yet. The review is in progress. So there were some issues with that circular and the contents of the sky map. And that was quickly fixed by sending the LAN inference updated sky map. And in the future, we'll make sure that you observers will be notified in advance, either if more tests with BitB are needed or when BitB finally takes over LAN inference. And of course, the documentation, the user guide, will be updated accordingly. Slide 6, the last alert from yesterday morning. As you probably noticed, there was about 2.5 hours delay between the time of the trigger and the time when we sent the circular, so 20.0219AC. It was basically due to technical problems to process the trigger, and so most, if not all, of the steps that are usually automated had to be done manually, and so that took quite a while. There was no problem with the pipelines, now with the quality of the data for that event. And after that, the low latency framework was quickly back to nominal state. And there has been post-mortem analysis right after that, and this is already completed. Some issue has been found, understood, and fixed. So hopefully that will not happen again. Moving on to slide 7. So the end date for O3 is confirmed to be April 30 at 15:00 UTC. And basically right after, upgrades will start at all three sites. In Virgo, we may do a few days of calibration and noise injection before really starting the work. And obviously for the last 2 months of O3, the priority is data taking with when possible some incremental improvements like the increase of the Virgo BNS range that I just mentioned at the beginning. Another thing worth mentioning is that basically starting in a few days, LIGO and Ford will start testing remote night shifts for 2 weeks. This is possible because they have very good automation, so they have procedures to relock automatically the interferometer and to go to observing mode. So the operator will stay at home, and he or she will be alerted in case of problems, and things should work as if that person were in the control room. A low impact on the duty cycle is expected, and what Enford will gain is that there will be more person power available to prepare the upgrades and the long shutdown to come. And of course, after the end of the test, there will be some assessments, and that will help for future runs, certainly. And LIGO Livingston will probably make a similar test in early March. Then after the end of O3, the plan is still to have a 20-month shutdown. And so the tentative start date for O4 will be mid-January 2022. Let me now move to some news from Kagra. So on slide 8, you can see the evolution of the sensitivity curve over the past 6 months. And as you can see, more than 5 orders of magnitude has been gained. The BNS range they report is around 400 kiloparsec and not 600 kiloparsec as written in the caption of this figure and the plot on the next page. And that's in power cycle fabric Michelson configuration. So that's a large improvement, but there is still some more needed to reach this 1 megaparsec magnitude. Moving on to slide 9, the plot here shows you the best Kagura sensitivity curve plus some noise budgets. So the best curve is the red one. And they are trying to identify the main noise sources and to fix or mitigate them. And in the meantime, they're also working on improving the stability at the best sensitivity. And like us in LIGO Virgo, they have some issues with the winter that is basically impairing some of their activities. Then the last slide, slide 10, in case you didn't know, the Gravitational Wave Advanced Detector Workshop has been cancelled for this year for reasons that you may understand. So this is a message from the local organizing committee. And as written there, the idea is to shift all the workshop by 1 year. And so to have the workshop that is a concept this year, next year in Japan, and so on. And I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Nicola. Okay, anyone got any questions? Please click on the raise hand. It's handy if you do that.
Yeah, this question, which was I want to sound sorry, I might have missed it earlier, but the Bilby versus Lowell inference, was that explained very clearly? Like, I know you mentioned it, but why Bilby is faster or better? Hello.
Yes. So this is a new...
Yeah, the Bilby versus Lowell inference codes. Why is Bilby... Did you say it was faster?
I don't know why it was faster for that particular event, but that's that's what the CBC chairs said, and so that's why they decided to send that update quickly, given that this candidate was potentially EM bright.
So it won't always be faster. And also, is the code sort of the differences, are they explained somewhere in writing?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, there's a...
Are the differences in the two codes explained somewhere in detail in a document somewhere? We've been wondering in our group.
But you have some links on slide 5 that leads you to a published paper and also the archived version if you don't have access to the journal. And as I said,
okay.
Whenever this software gets the standard for parameter estimation, everything you need to know will be documented in the user guide.
Great, okay, thanks so much.
Nicola, may I? Oh, thank you, yeah. No, I mean, Bilby is and Lowell inference are, you know, doing mathematically equivalent things. They're, you know, the ultimate goal and the expectation is that they're the output from Bilby and Lowell inference are interchangeable. There are many reasons why it's faster. It's just a more modern, implementation of an MCMC analysis using, essentially the same models.
Okay, that's very helpful too. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think the key thing, actually, Eric also put a little message in the window, which I know you cannot see because you're on the phone. But Bilby, there is a paper that is imminent to describe it. And Leo's point is the most important thing. It's the evolution to a modern architecture so that we can be more efficient at doing development and bringing improvements to bear. The old C code is always a little clunky to get updates and improvements into. Ryan.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
I was just wondering about the end of run date now that it's confirmed. Does that mean that Kagura will not be joining or at least not expected to be joined? And then also if there's some additional information about the details of the 20 month. I know earlier the shutdown or the gap between 03 and 04 was going to be shorter. So are there any updates on either of those?
First, let me address the, unless we have someone directly from CAGRA, I can just give the report based on my conversation yesterday. CAGRA will begin observing. They're going to start observing next week. Their sensitivity is very low as relative to the best LIGO-Virgo detectors right now. So the plan is not to integrate their data directly into the observational strategies at that point. They'll continue to press on noise sources, as Nicola indicated, and you know, who knows, over the months, that what sometimes happens when new detectors begin observing is that the opportunity to sort of step back from the instruments for a little while lead to some insight that then allows the range to be improved a little further. So we don't really know where it'll go, but you saw what is their best sensitivity right now, 600 kiloparsecs. And they're pressing pretty hard, and they've been trying to press hard towards the 1 megaparsec goal, but haven't quite got there yet. So that's the best we have on CAGRA right now. But you know, bottom line, they will be observing. It's just not going to be fully integrated into our observational strategies. Your second question was about the downtime. I am not the best person to respond to that. I wonder if somebody who is closer to the sites at the present time, I've not caught up on the most recent things. Is anyone online that could actually respond directly? Keda, thank you.
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, Ryan was just asking about the 20-month downtime that is planned after 03 ends. He just wanted to kind of know, you know, is that fairly solid? And it seems to have changed and become a little bit longer, although I don't think that's the case, but I'll check that relative to what we had announced while you're discussing, Keda. I'm just giving an update on what's planned.
Okay. I'm not sure if the interruption is longer than planned. I thought that actually it was along the plan. But anyway, what we're doing, going to do, are, you know, actually many things in chamber, also outside of the chamber. And at Hanford, we're going to swap the mirrors, and we're going to implement a part of, you know, A plus feature, which is called filter cavity. This is going to allow us to fine tune the squeezing, squeeze vacuum phase relative to the interferometer phase, depending on the frequency. Right now, you know, our squeezer is tuned for high frequency, and high meaning, you know, much larger than 100 Hertz or larger than 100 Hertz. And this is the same for Hanford and Livingston. And it should be the same for Virgo. And that means that at lower frequency, it's suboptimal. And you know, maybe it's doing some harm via the radiation pressure. So this filter cavity is going to address that. But we need to add more vacuum chamber to the facility. So that's a, you know, quite a big surgery. And we're going to install more baffles for scattered light noise and that kind of stuff. And so actually, you know, our installation schedule is going to be pretty tight. And as we are speaking, people are, you know, making preparations for these kind of things. So that's the plan. So the plan is, well, kind of solid, and actually there's not much, you know, play in the plan.
Thanks, Keda. And Ryan, I did, just while we were here, just check what our, you know, various latest documents are. And yeah, the sort of the diagram, which I know everyone basically looks to as the possible start dates, did show that 04 could start in the fourth quarter of 2021. But adjustments in the actual time estimates for what will be required in order to do the work have meant that that start date has been modified as presented by Nicola.
Thank you.
Okay. If there are no other questions, what we'll do is we've got an update or a presentation from Igor Andreoni, and I think we'll move to that. Oh, actually, I see Juan Garcia. Go ahead.
Hi, Patrick. So I actually wrote a question in the chat, but nobody noticed. So the question is the following. Do you know the origin of the improvement from Virgo DNS range from 50 to 60 megaparsecs? What happened?
So it was not 50 to 60, it's more like 53, 54 to 58, 59 currently. So there were some photodiodes replaced at the dark port and the noise was reduced. There was also work on squeezing, the alignment, the matching were tuned, and a little bit of over, let's say, control improvements here and there, and each of them gave maybe 1 or 2 megaparsecs. So at the end, you get like 5 or 6 or something more, or an interferometer more stable that helps making more progress.
So is it expected in the next few months to improve this significantly above 60?
I'm not sure. I think the goal is to try to be constant at 60 or slightly above if possible, and to stay at that level and make it the new nominal DNS range for Virgo.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, let's move on. And Igor, I sort of tap you in 10 minutes from now and ask you to wrap up if you're going well. Take it away.
Sure. Can you correctly see my slide?
Right now, I only see a blank screen. I did see your slide moment for a little while, but it disappeared.
Okay, I went in full screen mode for the PDF, and that didn't do good. Can you see now?
Yeah. Yes, we can.
Okay, so thank you very much for letting me speak today. My name is Igor Andreoni, and I would like to talk on behalf of the Growth Collaboration, whose members are representing several universities around the world. And I would like to give you a taste of our work that we did using DECAM data during the follow-up of the neutron star black hole merger candidate S190814BV. Why do we like this event? If we go to the next slide, besides of course being a possible neutron star black hole merger, the false alarm rate was very low. So this is a very high confidence trigger, and the localization was excellent, down to 23 square degrees for the 90% probability with the Lal inference chi map. Although the distance was a bit of a worry for observers, 267 megaparsecs is quite far away and requires very deep observations to be able to be constraining. Another factor that is somewhat worrying is that the estimated probability to have remnants that could generate a bright transient was very low. So the Hess remnant less than 1% may actually suggest that this event could be a binary black hole merger instead of neutron star black hole merger, or that the mass ratio is extremely large. So this is just something to keep in mind throughout the presentation. In the next slide, I wonder even why we should expect a kilonova to be generated at all by neutron star black hole mergers. And here the answer is yes, we can expect a kilonova even if we don't have a binary neutron star merger. In fact, in particular, if the disruption of the neutron star happens outside the innermost stable circular orbit of the black hole, then a lot of ejecta can be generated, and then a bright transient can be seen from far away. And in that case, the characteristics of the electromagnetic signature, in particular of the optical signature that can be produced, may be fairly similar to what was observed in case of GW17 0817. The data that we analyzed for this work are acquired with the dark energy camera. So apologies for people more expert in other wavelength. This would be mainly an optical astronomy talk. And the dark energy camera is an excellent instrument to do gravitational wave follow-up. The main features that make it pretty good is that the field of view is of about 3 square degrees. So it's very good for synoptic searches for counterparts. And the instrument is very sensitive. And on top of being very sensitive, it's mounted on a 4-meter telescope, which means that the depth that can be reached during the observation can be significant. So particularly good in case of 14 BV. The next slide, I simply summarize the follow-up that was done with DECAM during O3. In particular, the first two triggers were organized and led by our growth team under our neutron star merger follow-up program that Danny Goldstein and I are PI of. And two more triggers, 28Q and 14 BV, were led by the Dark Energy Survey collaboration under a program for binary black hole follow-up. I'm not fully aware, to be honest, if this was a point also for for the other teams who proposed for DECAM time, but for sure our team pushed very hard for all DECAM data to become immediately public immediately after they were taken. So this happened throughout O3, so everyone can immediately use DECAM data when observations are made. In the next slide, I showed that the initial classification of 14 BV actually was a mass gap event, so more likely a binary black hole, and that's why the DES team started leading the observations. And then when the classification changed, it was definitely the smartest thing to let them do their job, finish taking their series of observation and taking those, I think, pretty awesome data that allowed us and other teams to do good science. They acquired I and Z band images for 6 nights, and the data were processed by different groups with several pipelines, at least for the DES team pipeline and our DECAM growth pipeline that in particular Danny Goldstein worked hard to put together. And I think that it was very good to have the same data analyzed by multiple people in order not to miss anything important. I think it's important to stress that many, many teams conducted follow-up of this event, and more than 70 transients were reported possibly associated with 14 BV. Unfortunately, none was classified to be the counterpart to the event, but let me point out that one in particular made us jump on our seats. This event showed a possible rapid evolution, rapid reddening in the first couple of days after the merger. It's just too bad that then our Keck observations allowed us to classify it as a stripped envelope supernova. So that was sounded really promising, but unfortunately it was another contaminant background or unrelated source. But what science, going to the next slide, can we do even if we don't have any detection? I think the good news here is that our team, as well as other teams, managed to constrain several type of phase space just based on non-detection thanks to deep observation acquired in synoptic or galaxy-targeted way. For example, in this plot, I show how we can constrain the ejecta mass and the opacity parameter space. Other teams, for example, Kawaguchi et al., use relative transfer simulations to obtain even more stringent constraints in this parameter space. But in our case, for kappa less than about 2 cm² per gram, we can constrain the ejecta mass to be less than 0.04, 0.03 solar masses, assuming that the event happened not quite at the further distance possible. So the distance here really plays an important role. In the next slide, I show that there are another interesting parameter space to explore is still involving the ejecta mass, but then also the viewing angle. And we demonstrated, like Kawaguchi et al. And the Engrave collaboration, how important the viewing angle can be in our ability to constrain the ejecta mass. And in particular, polar viewing angles are the angles that actually allow us to place the most stringent constraints. While other groups, for example, Sebastian Gomez et al. Or Watson et al., focus more on the afterglow, GRB afterglow scenario, and that also helps excluding that bright transient from a polar viewing angle occurred simultaneously with 14 BV. In the next slide, I show one further parameter space that can be constrained only with radio observation. So Dougal Dobie, a student from Sydney, led this paper that describes their ASCAP radio observations and the circummerger density can also be constrained as a function of observing angle, viewing angle. In the next slide, I show one example of how the parameters of the orbit of the merging system can be constrained once the ejecta mass limit is established with the optical observations in this case. So, in particular, the maximum spin aligned with the orbital momentum component, a maximum value of that can be established once we fix a value for lambda, for the neutron star deformability. So for example, if we pick the maximum neutron star deformability allowed from 17.0817, which is probably about 800 or 900, then we can tell that the maximum spin is probably less than 0.7, if we assume a mass ratio relatively low, say lower than 5 or 6 or 7. And I think it's important to point out here that people really got creative and using different models managed to constrain other properties of the merging system or similar properties, but in different ways. And in my last slide, I would like to make the point that I think one more time, the EM community is demonstrating to be ready, not just to do science in a previous case like 17.0817, which a bright counterpart was found, but also when a counterpart is not found. And the fact that the trigger was of such high confidence really encouraged the community to perform observations and to then really squeeze their brains to do science with it. And I'm sure that more works will be published very soon that will add even more information to this already colorful picture that we managed to create around 14 BV. And thank you very much for the attention, and let me know if you have any questions.
Igor, thank you, and thank you for staying fairly close to time there. It's an exciting set of observations and interpretational papers. Let's see, Mark.
Hello. So I have a question for Igor. When he says polar viewing angle, is that from the perspective of Earth or from the object?
It means that basically we see the merging system edge on. Face on. Apologies.
So
that we are aligned with the line perpendicular to the orbiting plane.
Okay, so perpendicular to the orbiting plane of the merging system.
Correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions or observations? This is really exciting, and Igor, I like your last point that the electromagnetic community is ready to go with observations of good candidates. This is exciting. Maybe nature will be kind to us in the next 2 months. Good. All right. So thanks again, and thanks especially for staying close to the 10 minutes. That it's nice to just have these presentations move through quickly. So as I mentioned, I want to just finish out with again going over the publications for anybody who wasn't here at the beginning of the call. So there are three candidates for which we have papers that are now in circulation within the LBK. They are the one for 190412M, 190521G, and 190814BV. The exact sequence for release we don't know yet, but what we do know is that the fastest time to release from today is of order 5 weeks. So that's just to give you a heads up that if you have something that you're doing and you want to kind of have it ready, roughly that's an estimate of when you kind of want to be looking at. Being a big collaboration and with the state that these papers are in at the present time, it is possible that the release date is beyond that 5 week window. So I don't want to have you kind of come back to me and say, we rushed and broke our backs to get this done and now you're not ready. It could take us, you know, any number of weeks more than that, but I also don't want you to be caught off guard by a release. The second item there is the mentioning of the gravitational wave transient catalog based on the O3A data. And the plan is still in place for that to be released in April. We would hope that it would be coming out and be released publicly around the sort of third week of April, but we're not close enough to that release date yet to be able to even to confidently say that that's the case. So we're going to keep working towards it, and at next month's call, we'll provide again updates on these to give you a little bit of a heads up if a paper is imminent. I think with that, we're at the end of the material for today's call. Is there anything else that anyone would like to ask about, or that any other point that anyone would like to make? Okay, in that case, thanks everybody. Thanks to the speakers for preparing slides, and thanks for everyone who contributed to the slides. I know that there are big teams behind all of these things, so it's an exciting time for us. Thanks very much. We'll talk on the phone in a month or so. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.